Hilda McDonald, leave a message.
Okay, hang on.
Thank you.
After leaving a message, you can hang up or press pound for more options.
Good morning, Hilda. I thought we had an appointment. We are here live on air, and we wish you were here with us. We're going to try to call you back, though. Okay, talk to you soon. So this morning, I ate the mushiest banana I've ever eaten in my life.
Ugh. I can't do it as soon as they have spots. So how was it?
Oh. Well, I like to consider myself a tough eater. And in a good way. Like, I'll eat a lot of different things. But the bananas we bought maybe 10 days ago. And we bought 3 bunches for to have bananas for a while. And now the 3rd bunch, oh my, they are brown. And I ate one this morning and it had no resistance at all. It was basically mush in my mouth all the way to the core of the banana.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. It wasn't very good, but I did it. I ate it. And the option for the rest of those bananas is either to freeze or banana bread.
Yeah. Okay, we'll get on that. Yesterday, I ate the mushiest cucumber I've ever eaten in my life.
Whoa, what was that like?
Not nice. Cucumbers are not meant to go mushy.
Oh, no. Do they start in the middle? They get mushier in the middle?
Well, I had to discard half of the cucumber because it was already, like, liquefied. But I saved the part that was still kind of firm, but it just didn't taste good.
The times are tough.
But I ate it.
You can't just go to the grocery store when you need a cucumber.
Yeah. I paid for that cucumber, so I tried to eat it.
You got
to
eat what you got.
Compost the rest.
Well, today we have a very special guest, and today we are up bright and early. Usually we do these at night with friends over the phone, but this morning we have a real professional with us. We've got the mayor of Leamington.
Yeah.
Her name is Hilda McDonald, and something that's interesting about Hilda is, well, I mean, for us, is that when we moved to Leamington... Here, we moved here after like 30 years living in Guelph. Moved here, and right as we moved here, the town got a new mayor called Hilda McDonald. So Hilda has been mayor of Leamington, but as long as we've lived in Leamington, we've only known her as our mayor. And I've been quite pleased. I've met her at various functions, different fundraisers, seen her at public events, and she's a really great person. She's down to earth. One time, I won't tell you this. I'll bring this up in the thing. We'll talk about it. But so she's agreed to talk to us today about the ongoing COVID situation in Leamington and some of the unique challenges that exist here and how we're all doing. So let's see if we can get her on the phone. Who knows?
Well, good morning, young man.
Hey.
Good morning, Hilda.
Hilda McDonald.
Hi. Good morning.
One of the intro pieces, pretty much the only intro piece that we really know about you politically, is that you became the mayor right as we moved to Leamington.
Right.
So you're the only mayor we've ever known, and we're satisfied so far.
Oh dear, the pressure is on.
Yeah.
Oh no.
But we hope today that as we hit you with these hard hitting questions, you keep that reputation in our household.
Okay. I hope so too. I will do my best.
Okay. You know Tina? Do you know my co-host and wife Tina?
I met Tina twice, I think. Once when she picked you up at the sleepover last April.
Oh yeah, that's
oh, yeah.
And one other time, and I don't recall when that was. And Tina, do you still work at Starbucks?
I do not.
No,
I'm full time at Thrift on Mill now.
Oh, good for you! Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Good. Well, anyway, so I do know.
Okay.
Your lovely wife.
Can we go back one step and just have you expand on what it meant that we had a sleepover last April?
I guess that isn't a good thing just to drop. Well, the bridge, last year the bridge, had a fundraising effort called the Sleepout. And people slept outside just to experience what it would be like to live in the elements for a night like our homeless folks.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a cold, cold night. Yeah. I was, I think, a week and a half warming up afterwards. It was a really good experience, I believe. For me, it was, anyway.
Yeah.
I remember laying there at about 2 in the morning thinking, no one will see me sneaking to my car and going home.
Whoa.
But I had parked at the Lutheran church. I didn't want to walk there. It just, no, it was cold and it was hard on the ground and it was just...
It was a rough night.
It was challenging, we'll put it that way.
I remember it pretty vividly. And I know I'd got a little bit of sleep during that whole thing, but I woke up, well, it was still dark. I was probably like 5 or 6 in the morning and was congested. I knew I had a cold of some kind from being out there for 8 hours or something. And even that was a big eye opener for somebody who has to sleep outside in even harsher months than April. Mm-hmm. And in one night I get kind of sick and feel lousy for 5 days. Imagine if you're doing that every night and just the ability you have to function when you feel like that crappy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then throw into that probably not getting enough food where we had food, right?
Right.
We'd had opportunity. I remember talking to you about the difference between laying and sleeping up against a building.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't, because I figured there were worms there. And I slept out in the open, but I wrapped myself in a tarp like a burrito just to stay warm. And, you know, and I had double socks and all those other things on. And so many times those folks don't have that ability. So,
yeah.
So that was the sleep out. And we were supposed to do it again this year, but because of our COVID-19 situation, I'm sure it will be pushed off to another date that will be challenging again. But I think it's always a good opportunity to live away from the comforts of home once in a while, just to realize what we do have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of COVID-19, that's sort of the precipitating factor for having a podcast right now. And we're really trying to just chat with people in unique situations about how they're coping with COVID-19. So we've spoken to a teacher. We've spoken to people doing, our friend is doing a PhD. We've spoken to a stand-up comedian. And we're lucky that we can speak to you because I think you have a unique perspective on how a municipality handles this. For so many people, we just know what we're supposed to do at home and what we are responsible for in terms of self-isolating and not having parties and not, you know, some of us can't go to work and we sort of get our orders from the top. And in some ways, in a certain jurisdiction, like you are at the top. And so we're curious to know how a municipality tackles this. What has been the process and the development of COVID-19 in terms of how you've had to respond and change and communicate with the public on how we're supposed to do this? And then, of course, Leamington is a unique town in Canada and has its own unique challenges that I'm sure you can tell us about. So do you want to just riff on that for a while and sort of tell us the story? And we've got some other questions for you here. Whenever.
Okay. Well, first of all, yes, I'm at the top. I'm at the top of the bottom. Municipalities are, you know, nose to nose with the residents, with their people, where upper levels of government don't have that unique opportunity. But the upper levels are the ones that determine much of the direction for us. So when the federal government, if they would call for a lockdown, a complete lockdown, we would have to fall in line.
Mm.
When the province sends out orders like closing parks, closing marinas, closing playgrounds, we have to follow in line. Our bylaw people have the ability now because the government gave them the ability to also enforce those rules. So those rules did not come from us. And many folks think that they do. Hmm. And many people think we have much more power than we do have. Now, we were able, as a county, all of us, all of the mayors of the seven municipalities got together and declared an emergency. And really, the only thing that that did was enable us to get some responses quicker from upper levels like the province. And we also wanted that to instill the importance of the situation on the residents. Mm. Because up until that time, in fact, I remember the morning so clearly. It was a Sunday morning. I had already answered the phone, my cell phone, at about 9 o'clock, and it was the hospital, it was the CEO of the hospital calling and asking if the municipality would consider using the ice pad as a temporary morgue. And I will tell you, that was like a bucket of cold water. I got off the phone and I said to my husband, stuff just got real. And then I got in the car and I had to drive to Essex because we had to vote on the declaration, the emergency declaration, and sign the documents and for our individual and municipalities as well. And I felt the weight of that decision and the importance of that decision like a weight, like a physical weight. Mm. And as I drove into Essex, and there's people going into the furniture store and shopping. Yeah. There were people at the Dairy Freeze getting ice cream. And it was so surreal. And I wanted to stop and scream.
Yeah. Whoa.
And it was surreal, but then I drove through town, and it was business as usual. People on the streets, Canadian Tire was full, people in Tim Hortons, and I came home, and again, I said, I can't believe that people aren't getting this, because we had already started the messaging.
Right.
Right? I'm going to say, well, see, I was supposed to leave for Florida. My hubby and I were leaving on the night of the 13th. The 12th all day, we were hedging. Oh, I called the insurance company, the health insurance, and they said, yeah, you're fine, but as soon as the government gives you the word to come home, you better get in your car and come home. Well, my husband said, I don't want to go and have you wondering every minute, should we have stayed home? So right. We decided to stay home. And really, from that Monday on, It was important to practice social distancing, and I haven't seen my grandchildren since that time. Mm. So from the government, from us, we had to do what the province said. We shut down the parks. We, you know, pushed the message through the Windsor Essex County Health Unit. We closed our own offices because people were coming in for things like dog tags. Whoa. I remember the one day we had an emergency management meeting, and I walked in and a lady was shuffling along, pushing her walker, coming to buy her dog tags.
Right.
So it was just a matter of we had to set the standard and say, no, you know what? We have to close our offices. We have to protect our staff. Hours of decisions were spent deciding, you know, how would we go about this? How could we distance our folks to keep them safe? How do we still get the job done? All of that, lots and lots of discussion, because really the water still needs to run, the sewage still needs to be collected, the roads still need to be kept up, all those things still need to be done, but you still have to keep your employees safe. So
right. Mm-hmm.
It's been a lot of conversation. Nothing's been done in a vacuum. We talk to other levels of government. We talk to other colleagues in the county. It's every day there's conversation about what we're doing and how we can do it better. And then things morph, right? They'll change, not day by day. They can change from hour to hour. And now all of a sudden, oh, this needs a different solution. So that's what it's been like. It's It's been an incredible experience to live through this and be so close to the epicenter of it. It's mm-hmm. been unreal and amazing all at the same time.
When you, like, right at the beginning of your comment, you mentioned the CEO of the hospital asking if we could use the ice pad as a morgue.
Yes.
And that was sort of a potential if the curve flattening measures didn't work?
Yes. And, you know, prior to that, that conversation, I had been at an emergency meeting called by the mayor of Windsor, Drew Dilkins. He had called it. All the mayors in the county were invited. Ended up two of us. Only two of us were able to go. But it was all of their key people. And that conversation at that meeting was about exactly that. The morgue capacity is not huge. It isn't big in hospitals and it isn't big in funeral homes. And that's the reason for the need for that. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And I remember thinking that, sitting there and thinking, I can't even believe we're having this conversation. It just seems so far-fetched. But then when you look at Italy, for example, where they're having 700 people a day dying, 700 to almost 1,000 in one day,
yeah.
And you can see the need for that. Now, again, smaller country, intensely dense, big cities. We have the luxury of space. We're not nearly as small or densely populated. None of that. So we have different situations. Majority of our people are more rural, so that living close is not the problem.
Right.
Sorry, this is what happens when I talk a lot.
That's okay. We can cut out the coughs.
The coughing.
We'll take care of you.
Okay. So that was the need, because normally hospitals might have more capacity for 3 or 4 bodies, but they don't have it, say, for 10.
Right. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And, I mean, even the idea of refrigerated trucks has also been floated, and we are working on the possibility of that as opposed to the other. We're getting, this is plan B, C, and D.
Yeah. So just as a whole, I know that you talked about different messaging and things that you're trying to communicate to the residents of Leamington surrounding COVID-19. How do you feel people have responded?
Sorry, disappointingly.
Oh.
I would say there's, you know what, I shouldn't, maybe that's too harsh.
Okay.
They always say, what, 80% of the people do what they're supposed to and 20% don't. Mm. Huh. And maybe that is the case. But I am very disheartened when I see folks not practicing social distancing. Or on this past weekend with Easter, I had a number of messages where people had company from out of province.
What?
Yes, my one of our residents, who I'm in fairly close contact with on her street, she said she saw cars with out-of-province plates and so on. That kind of thing discourages me. Mm-hmm. And at first, I took it very hard. It bothered me. I became angry and frustrated. And finally, I've decided I cannot help people that don't help themselves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I've had to let that go. I still message every day. Well, maybe not today, but most days I reinforce that in my posts. I post every day on my personal page and on my mayor page to get that message out. Mm-hmm. And I reached out also some of our low German folks, and I understand this. My parents came here in the early 50s from Austria at that time, and they had their own church group. It was a Pentecostal church, and it was a close-knit community, and the church was their community. So I get those insular communities. I totally understand it. But we were having lots of complaints about the young people from the Low German community still congregating in parking lots and so on. Mm. So I reached out to, I think it was 5 different leaders within that community, different branches, Old Order, a little bit more modern, Deer Run Church, and so on. And they asked me to send a letter to them because I said to them, I said, I understand it. I totally get that. But I said, these young people could wipe out an entire generation of grandparents. I also know they respect and honor their grandparents, and that is not what they would want to do, but they need to understand the seriousness of this.
Yeah.
And I had great response from each leader within those within that community. And I just tried to impress upon them about the need to socially isolate within their families, not to get together as a church group and so on. And I got good response, and I'm hoping that they followed through. Not everyone will, but we're doing our best to get the message out. And, you know, I keep getting things sent to me, the flu has higher death rate. And somebody yesterday posted a link. Oh, so many people have died of cancer, and so many people die of heart attack, and the numbers are staggering. And the problem is, those things are not as contagious as COVID-19.
Right.
And yesterday, someone died that I know.
Oh, man.
And that's going to happen. I believe each one of us will know someone that will die from this.
Yeah.
Unless we flatten the curve. If we flatten the curve, the rate of that will be much lower. But if we don't, if people continue to get together and people don't isolate themselves, the numbers will increase. But I don't know anyone that has died of the flu, and I'm 66 years old. In my lifetime, I never knew of anyone that died of the regular flu.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But now I know somebody that I've known for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I believe that the majority are practicing, but the ones that aren't are disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that mix, we have a migrant worker population.
Yeah, we're really interested to hear actually what the dynamic is with that population. And in terms of they live, but living conditions sort of provided for them are high density housing.
Yes. Well, I'm going to say the end of the first week, I drove through town and saw the groups of men together. And then I got complaints, you know, of buses dropping people off, and there were 15 in a van and so on. So I reached out to the OGVG, the Ontario Vegetable Growers, Greenhouse Vegetable Growers Board, because I have a good relationship with both the general manager and their community relations scientist. I reached out to my doctor, Sheila Horn, and I reached out to the health unit. We had a teleconference, and we talked about the need to get that message out. And within about 4 days, OGVG, as well as the health unit, put together messaging in a number of languages. I'm going to say 5 languages. They also sent out a strongly worded letter to the farms, telling them they need to inform their people. And I do believe that a lot of the bigger farms did do that because they have the means to do that.
Right.
The isolation, the distancing part is a little bit more problematic. But when you think about it, they are. The ones that have been here for a number of months, they have lived as a family. Even though there are lots of them, they have lived in a fairly self-contained unit.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever go in a greenhouse, the health, there's a sanitization procedures are pretty intense.
Mm-hmm.
So some of that isn't a concern when they're on the farm. The concern is when they interact with other farms and other workers,
right,
and other folks in the public, the bank, the grocery store, and so on. So we've worked at getting that messaging out there. The wording became a little bit stronger, I'm going to say a week and a half after that, when we saw that there were still some people not listening. But then we started to see that farms were bringing in a van with maybe 2 people in it, and they were going into the grocery store after closing and getting their groceries for their farms.
Whoa.
We also asked some of them to do click and collect, which is a little bit more problematic because so many people are doing click and collect, right?
Yeah, it's backed up.
Online grocery shopping. But they're moving towards that. Some of them have already started moving towards online banking. Last week, the migrant worker community program, Martin Varela, is one of their lead people. He and Catherine Burt, the community relations officer OPP. For the OPP, did a video. And we're talking also about putting some messaging on some speakers so that every 30 minutes or so we can talk about it. Martin also went into the core and spoke to the gentleman in Spanish and talked to them about it. So we're getting there. It's a process. And then, you know, our own folks get so upset because this is still happening. But if they would look at the older people that are still shopping, the people that are high threat, high risk, which is what I am too, that they're still going, that you have to understand getting the message across to our own people who speak the language is difficult.
Right.
And now you've got folks who come from very rural settings in a country that does not speak English, and getting that message across is more challenging and problematic. We will get there. We're working towards it, but it isn't easy. It isn't quick.
Mm-hmm. And last week on CBC Radio, they were talking with a fruit farmer in Niagara about international workers. And they said that they were receiving charter flights of people from Jamaica and Mexico, but they'll be quarantining them for 14 days upon arrival.
Yes.
Do you know if any of the greenhouses in Leamington are facing a similar situation?
Yes, they are. Huh. A plane load, I believe, from Jamaica came in last Thursday. Before they left from Jamaica, temperatures were taken and health questions and so on were asked. Upon arrival, same thing, and they were brought in, and they are being isolated for 14 days, separate from the other workers, and separate from the farms that are being worked on. A number of them have had to set up different housing situations to get through this. The thing is, the produce is, or the plants are planted, and the time for harvesting is coming. So there is a need to have those workers here.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the question or the statement is made, but they could use our own people. But they've tried that in the past and have lots of problems with attendance.
Right.
And they have to have people that they can count on that will come to work every day.
Yeah.
And with these workers, they can count on that. These people are here to make their lives better back home, to provide for their families in a way that they couldn't provide for them at home.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a win-win for both of us. We just have to find a fair and equitable way to deal with them. Remembering also they have human rights too. We can't just lock them up and throw away the key. They have to have the ability to shop. They have to have the ability to bank. We just have to find the ways for them to do that they aren't a threat to the rest of our population and they aren't a threat to themselves. Because if COVID-19 got into a bunkhouse, that farm would be in big trouble because those people would be ill and unable to harvest their crop, and they would not get more workers. So to think that farms are just flagrantly, you know, not following the rules is not correct. It's all a matter of getting the processes in place. And I said this so many times, my friend put it to me this way. She said, you are hacking your way through the forest a way that's never needed to be found before.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We're all finding our way. We are all in this together in various degrees of suffering, if you will.
Yep.
But we are trying to find our way through this to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Will we make mistakes? You betcha. When we look back on this, will we wish we would have done some things differently? I would imagine so. But we are doing everything we can to the best of our ability with the knowledge that we have at the current time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, I mean, have you heard anything about how this changes in a, we have, because Leamington is very mixed. We have an urban setting and a rural setting, and there's sort of the line around here of it's a small town, but it's not a small town.
Yeah.
We have, or it's a small town with kind of big city issues, big city challenges. So is there a way that this information gets sort of spread, or like how does it work in a rural area where houses are acres apart, or you know, it's not as easy for OPP to be out and making sure that people are, or bylaw for that matter, to be out and making sure that people are not having gatherings at home?
Well, we put in our digital signage. I mean, most people are connected to the internet in some fashion.
Right.
It certainly is on the radio and it's on the television and it's in the newspapers.
Yeah.
So unless someone is totally disconnected from the population and from society, I don't think there's any way that you cannot get the message, cannot not get the message.
Right.
If you go to the grocery store, there are lines where you have to stand. They only let so many people in at a time. I think the messaging is out there. I don't know how you could possibly not figure out that something is up.
Right.
And we try, like we decided right away at the beginning to put the messaging on our digital signs. It's on our municipal website. I post on Facebook every day. It's in the newspaper. I don't know how people could not get that message.
Right.
And if they are so isolated, they won't even need the message. Because they will just be living in their little world with no contact with anyone else, and they should be absolutely fine.
Yeah, they should be safe.
They should be, yeah.
How are you doing with all of this personally?
Personally, I'm fine.
Good.
Oh, my husband will tell you. I have my meltdown moments. There are times when it just gets to me, but for me, being close to what's happening, like I say, the epicenter, I do feel like I have some control. I'm able to help people, and that is gratifying. I miss my grandchildren terribly.
Yeah.
We live on 2 acres of property, so I can walk every day outside around my yard. My husband's in his shop from morning till evening, so that's probably a good survival tactic.
Yes.
Because he said to me this morning, he had heard somewhere, oh, it was on the radio, that after this is over, there are going to be a lot of divorces because people have never had to live that close with their spouses for such a continuous amount of time. But he and I are really good. I work from my dining room table. I start in the morning. Every day, I kind of wait to see what the theme will be, and sure enough, every day there's a different theme. You know, one day it was working on the migrant worker issue. Another day, I was calling all of my contacts to get more PPE, personal protection equipment, for the funeral home. Another day, it was about working with the construction and greenhouse and finding out what the new order meant, the stop of construction. Every day it's a new thing. Today it's sandbags and yard waste. So I have to say that part is challenging and interesting. I love that aspect of it. But I worry for the folks that have no income.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I worry for at the end of this, I think there will be PTSD, for lack of a better word. I think people will have some mental issues.
Mm-hmm.
Coping.
Yeah.
I worry about coping skills, and I guess that's where the mental issues come. I'm not trying to be derogatory in any fashion.
No, no.
I'm seeing even now people are reaching out with issues that I've tried to say, you know what, think about that when this is over. This doesn't need to be a concern right now, but I have a feeling that there will be people, because they're either by themselves or they tend to brood, they will make this be much bigger and stressful for themselves than it needs to be. My mom is at the Mennonite home, and she's very happy. She's in retirement.
Mm-hmm.
She's content. She knows she's well taken care of. And it's, I talk to her with FaceTime once a week, or as she would say, the FaceTime once a week.
Get on the FaceTime.
And we talk on the phone, and my sister does the same thing, and my brothers. So that aspect is good. My kids are still, my son-in-law is still working. My daughter is to a degree. So that hasn't been a concern for financial. but I'm concerned about, you know, if this goes on into June and July, well, what happens then? I do think this isn't going to be over in May.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, like Winston Churchill said, this is just the beginning, the end of the beginning.
The end of the beginning.
This is the end of the beginning. I think we will feel the reverberations of this for many months to come.
Yeah.
And I think even when we get back to work, there will still be restrictions. And I have asthma. That's why I'm hacking and coughing. I have asthma. So for me, even if the restrictions are lifted, the chances of me going out into big social settings are not great.
Yeah.
I don't want to die from this.
No.
I know we all have to die at some point in time, but I prefer that to be 30-some years down the road.
Yeah.
I still have things to do and people to meet and grandchildren to love and a husband I still want to spend a few more decades with.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I'm sure I will be feeling this well into the fall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I saw the Festival of Birds that I think goes like May 1 to May 20, mm-hmm. but that's been canceled. And that just sort of leads me to think about all of the other summer amenities or summer events that happen in Leamington. Hogs for Hospice is another big one. Events that have been shut down, that are disappeared. So I'm kind of wondering if you can give us any insight into how big the tourism in Leamington is in the summer and how big a hit this will be.
I quite frankly don't expect there to be much tourism at all this summer. Even now I've had B&B people ask me, should they cancel their birders in May? And I'm saying, yes, I believe you need to. People need to realize this is important. And really, do we want people coming from away?
Right.
No, we don't. Yeah. And it's not that we're not hospitable, but we already are concerned with the capacity of our hospital, with the residents that live here.
Mm-hmm.
And to have people from away who may not practice social distancing coming into our community, we really don't want that at this point in time. Speaking further, I don't know. I don't want to speak on behalf of Hogs for Hospice, but I believe our tourism will be non-existent this year.
Right.
And we certainly, like our friends in the U.S., their numbers are much, much higher. I'm afraid. I'm afraid for that. And I don't want that border to be opened until they get a grip on this and they start to see their numbers go down, because that will not bode well for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I understand Hogs for Hospice, that is, you know, that's their reason to be, right, is that weekend, and that's in August, and I think there's still a bit of a way away from that. But for us as a municipality, we have not booked people for our concerts yet, because we don't know what's going to happen. And again, you're setting the stage, if you will, for the amphitheater, for lots of people to be in close contact. And I think it's irresponsible for us to let on like that will go on, and it won't, and it more than likely won't, because And I think the expectation is there will be another spike to this. So,
yeah.
So a lot Second of decisions wave. Have not been made. We've been looking at it, you know, like 1 month ahead, like the upper levels do, and then making those decisions accordingly. But I'm a realist, and I think people need to prepare themselves. I always say it's better to prepare yourself for the worst and get the best than to expect the best and get the worst, because that's devastating.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always a realist when it comes to that. I think our expectation should be that this will be a very quiet summer when it comes to tourism. But once this is over, once the social distancing has been practiced and the curve comes down, and once there is a vaccine, life will slowly return to normal, but it will be slow. I go to Italy usually once a year, every other year. My expectation is not to go back for at least 5 years.
Yeah, wow. And what's sort of helping you make that decision, or what are the factors that you're thinking about?
I don't want to be in an airplane with a whole bunch of people that I don't know where they've been. I don't want to get sick.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't want to get sick. It's not that it's Italy. It's the getting there.
Right.
It's the getting there that causes me concern. When you're in that cylinder with a whole lot of other people, you know, oftentimes people come back from vacation with colds that they caught on the airplane. I'm not going to put myself into that situation that I could get sick. I'm not willing to risk it and then bring anything back home. My husband and I are both over 65.
Mm.
We are considered high risk, and that is not something that I'm going to do with my eyes wide open.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Time will tell. I do think life will be different for a long time. I'm hoping we come out of this better.
Yep.
I'm hoping that we will appreciate the earth. When you think of how the world is almost coming back to, well, when there's dolphins in the canal in Venice and coyotes, I think, somewhere in a big city, it's like the earth has just stopped and it's starting to heal itself.
Yeah.
I hope at the end of it all that we have an appreciation for our own lives, for our relationships with each other, for our ability to have a job and go to work. I hope we appreciate our family members, and we appreciate those moments of getting together and having a meal or a drink together. I hope we never lose that, and I hope our children and our grandchildren carry that on, because I think we've become very matter-of-fact, very, I don't know what the word would be, we've lacked the appreciation for the gifts of the earth and the gifts of our lives.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that the lesson is deeper faith, a deeper connection, and better, kinder hearts.
Yeah, I think that this has, as you're talking about appreciation, folks who are starting to feel lonely, folks who are starting to go a little bit stir crazy, but then there's also the people who are starting to appreciate things that they just didn't have time for in the past. Mm-hmm. People who are taking up hobbies at home, people who are, you know, I called my grandma, and I'm not a great grandson. I don't call my grandma very often, but in this time, it's like another reminder. Call the people you love.
Yeah.
And just keep up with them. Get to know what they're going through at their end of the world.
Yeah. And I think appreciating people, I've been trying to tell people, I appreciate your friendship. I appreciate the fact that you are a colleague I can count on. I think it's good to say those things, and we often don't. We're embarrassed to say them, or we don't take the time, or we don't even bother to appreciate because we are so busy. So I'm blessed. I'm blessed that I am where I am, and I know there are people not nearly as blessed as I am, and those are the people I worry about, and those are the people that I try to help. When they call me, I have connections. The food bank. Oh, and you won't know this yet, Zach, but our homelessness grassroots committee met virtually on Friday, and the Anglican Church has agreed to be a homeless shelter during COVID. They are working with the City of Windsor, and they will be putting together a proposal because the city has been allocated a fair amount of money to find accommodations for homeless. So we are working towards that. So it's forcing our hands to be better,
mm-hmm.
Government and people.
Yeah, it is. Well, you've hit this one out of the park.
come on. You say those things to all the people.
I don't, because sometimes it's just chit-chat. But you, I really appreciate the insight you've given us into the role of a mayor. Part of our joking ahead of this whole thing was we are still a little bit woefully unaware of what a mayor actually is.
What? You'll have to follow me to work one day.
Well, I live on the street where you work, but I'll come follow you around at work. Can I sit in your meetings and everything? I'll just be silent in the back.
Well, most of them are public. You could certainly come and attend.
I know. I've been intending to go to a city council meeting, but I have meetings in the evening often, or I'm just wiped by the end of a Tuesday don't go to the meeting.
Well, we live stream them now.
Oh.
Yep, you can just go on the website and click the link. So tomorrow night, I will be at town hall with the clerk and the gal that takes the minutes.
Yeah.
My colleagues will be on telephones, but there needs to be visual, I guess, for the folks live streaming. So I will be there. So tomorrow night at 6:00, you could watch our meeting.
We could watch you in action?
Yes, but it's from a distance, so which is a good thing because I tend to make faces, and my colleague Paul Thiessen always reminds me to not do that. I've always been a face maker, you know, so I have to learn to be more straight-faced. But the camera's at the back of the council chambers, so you will hear the and see us from a distance. But you're welcome to watch. Yeah, so it's great. You can do it from the comfort of your own living room.
We just may do that.
Yeah.
We do keep up with you in the paper, though. We read the South Point Sun.
Good.
And I see that one thing that made me like you even more was that you were taking the OPP to task a little bit in the last year.
Yes.
Do you care to comment on that?
I have a really good relationship with a staff sergeant, and I really appreciate our officers on the street. My argument is with the administration that uses the same model for every community in the province.
Right.
And we are not every community.
Hmm.
And that has been a very difficult message to get across.
Right.
And they refuse to give us things like response times and so on. So we are just raising the bar on what our expectations are. And if they don't meet that bar, well, we'll have to look elsewhere. We've offered. We wanted to, even when Mayor Patterson was there, I was in on the meeting where we met with the inspector, and we asked for 2 extra officers, at least Thursday, Friday, Saturday,
mm-hmm.
Sunday. We were willing to pay the wages, and they said no. We asked it again this time, and they said, well, you could get specialty officers, say, like, I can't think of what they'd be called, but say one that has a dog for crimes and so on.
Right.
So Councillor Wilkinson said, well, if we do that, when they're not working in their area of specialty, would they then be boots on the ground? And they said, no, they would be in the office. If they are not working on their specialty, then they would just be in the office, and that is not good enough for us. We have tried and tried to have conversation, but it seems to fall on deaf ears, so we're working towards that. But like I said, Staff Sergeant Brian Johnson is very accessible to me. I text him, I call him all the time. We have sometimes fairly animated conversations. And, you know, sometimes we have to agree to disagree. But I will tell you, he's very good to me. He's good to this community, as are many of our officers. Hmm. Their hands are tied by their administration and also by the judicial system that allows people to get out even after they've been caught stealing and they have a record. They're let out on bail or whatever it is they call it, and those people go right back to the same method of operation. Mm. And I know our jails are full because of addictions and mental health and so on, but really the system needs to be fixed from the ground up.
Yeah.
So we'll see. And I'm not afraid to tackle those issues, and I'm not afraid to speak my mind. Sometimes it gets me into trouble, but I'm just not afraid. Maybe I should be, but I'm not.
No. Don't be afraid.
Nope, I'm not. I have faith, and that gets me through, and that's what's been steadfast for me in this as well.
Yeah.
Is faith. And that to me is the answer to a whole bunch of my challenges.
Yeah.
Even every day when I post something, I make sure that I sit back and say, tell me what to say. I need help. Yeah. And it works. I have a calmness I don't usually have. Again, and that's not me. That's not me. I know that.
You like this calmness, unusual calmness that you have? It's
yeah. That's not me. That's not typical me. Ask anybody who knows me really well. Mm-hmm. But I have a quiet confidence that right now is getting me through, and it's what I need, and I have it, and I rely on it. And it's not me.
What was the last public event you went to before everything shut down?
Oh my gosh, I had a heck of a weekend. I had I think it was 3 functions in the one day.
Whoa.
On the Sunday, in the morning, it was Women International Day of the Woman. So in the morning, I spoke at a function at 10 o'clock, I believe, at a brunch. I can't remember. I had something in the afternoon at 1:30, and then I had a gala in the evening.
Wow.
At the Cleary Center for the Arts, the St. Clair Center for the Arts. And I had a function on the Saturday night as well. Oh, that was the sportsman's dinner, the wild game dinner.
At Colasanti's?
What's that?
At Colasanti's?
No, not that one. This one is a little more tame, if you will. It was at the Lebanese Club, and it's put on by the Sportsman Club, which is primarily members from the Rhine Danube. They have elk and schnitzel.
Wow.
It's always a really good meal, and it's a fun night. So, yeah, that weekend I had, and I think there was something in the day. I had something that morning as well. So it was a good way to end up my social season.
Yeah.
Because after that, it was done.
The two that I was at that were big was, I was at the UMEI 75th anniversary thing, the coffee house that happened. And yeah. I think Chili Fest also. Was it Chili Fest? That was recently, right?
I think so.
Was that Chili Fest? Yes, I was at Chili Fest. That was, yeah, probably a week or two before.
Yeah, you were serving chili. I remember seeing you there.
I was.
We waved.
Yep, I was. And the sportsman dinner was the same night as the UMEI Coffee House, because Dave Epp sat at our table, and then he went to the Bank Theater after
right.
that.
Right. Ah.
Yep, so now my Saturday nights are spent, hubby and I, in the living room.
What do you guys do there? You watch movies?
Yep, we watch movies. What else? We have a couple of shows that we like to watch. Sometimes I'm on my iPad playing games. Sometimes I'm reading a book. Like tonight, tomorrow I have 3 virtual meetings. And 4 virtual meetings tomorrow. So I have today, I'll be preparing for those, and then I have 2 on Wednesday, so 2 nights of virtual meetings as well. So the next 2 nights I'll be indisposed, I'll be at the table watching my colleagues. But yeah, we watch different things. he watches a couple of things like golf and so on. That's when I'm either reading or playing games or something. Yeah. So it's good. We're lucky. We're blessed. I will say that.
Do you have any TV or movie recommendations?
No, I'm terrible at that. I'm terrible. I'm terrible. I can't remember the names of them. And you know what? I like the shows I like are like NCIS and FBI and things like that. But they can't be too violent. So I'm quirky. I'm quirky like that. And I like the show called Bull. That's a psychologist, and he figures out how to make the jury change its mind. I like things like that. So cool. I'm not very interesting when it comes to movies and television, I don't think.
That's all right.
That's cool. We're watching all of our old VHSs.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah. Do you happen to have a box of VHS movies in your house?
We might. You want me to look?
I would love that. Yeah, I'm trying, because we're running out over here. We have maybe three left that we haven't watched, so we're...
Okay.
We can't go to Value Village and get any more, but if you have a box of them...
Let me look. I'll go downstairs.
That would be awesome.
And if I do, then I'll drop them off on your porch, and you can look at them. How's that sound?
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Okay, I will look. I'm going to make myself a note. VHS. And then if they are, drop them off.
Wow.
Awesome.
That'd be great. And okay. I'll text you my address.
Okay, yeah, just text me that. Yeah. Perfect.
Awesome.
You're in my contact list now, so watch out, you two.
That's what you said. You said you're in my contact list. I hope you don't regret that or something.
Oh, well. But thank you for this opportunity. This has been fun for me.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
All mine.
Thanks so much.
Welcome.
And I'll send you a link to this so you can share it with who you want if you care to share.
Yeah. I do. I'd like to. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I especially will share when there's no picture of me. That's perfect.
Well, I actually will hand draw a picture of you.
Well, that's okay. I like those.
Okay, cool.
And, okay.
Hey, really, thank you for your service as mayor and for communicating well with us. We feel like we've got some good leaders on the ground here, and we appreciate the work that you do. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure. Take care, both of you, okay?
You too.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
She's awesome.
She's great, yeah. I like that she doesn't seem to have a lot of canned answers, which I really like.
Yeah, yeah.
She's a person who is not, she doesn't have her media prepared statements.
No.
She'll just talk.
Yeah.
She'll just have a conversation and just tell you what's on her mind.
Mm-hmm.
She brings emotion to the job. She brings conviction to the job. And I appreciate that.
She's great.
Mm-hmm. Way to go, Mayor. All right. Well, is there anything else?
I don't have anything. Do you?
We're working on the sign. The sign's coming together.
Oh, I forgot about that. Okay, so yeah, that went really well. I think we're going to have enough. We're going to make two signs.
We have two pieces of wood. We actually have four pieces of wood if we count front and back.
That's true. And then we can always paint over it. We have so much paint, and it went really quickly. Like, we painted that whole board. We, like, got it ready in maybe, like, I don't know, 20 minutes last night.
Yeah, it was not that long of an ordeal.
Yeah. So we'll have to, I don't know how we share through a podcast what that looks like. Make it the photo art for one of the episodes or something.
The sign. Yeah, we'll have the sign episode and we'll put the sign up and talk about the sign.
Yeah.
Well, all right. So look, we are about to release three more episodes. We have one more guest lined up. So if you are a listener to this, maybe you've gotten this from a friend, maybe you've been on the show and you're just keeping up with it. We would love to hear suggestions of people you'd like to hear from on here. We like to do a little bit of research ahead of time and have some questions prepped. But other times we just like to have a conversation and see where it goes. So if you know somebody who has an interesting take on COVID or who's just maybe responding in a neat way to COVID in their neighborhood, in their role as a professional, whatever they do, we'd love to hear from them and talk with them and be able to put out more episodes for you guys. So hit us up. I don't know how we'll you can contact out us. A way. I don't know. Call the mayor. She knows how to get a hold of us. All right. Well, that's it. That's all. We're out. Bye.
Bye.